TV Corner.
Hey guys, welcome to another Film Corps TV Corner Game of Thrones podcast. This time we have a 2-for-1. We're doing episode 7 and episode 8, titled The Broken Man and No One. I've got Greg here again, and this time we have Curtis joining us from across the pond.
Hi guys.
Filling in. Yeah. Welcome, filling in for TJ. All right, so let's just hop right in. We'll just jump on the people who we haven't seen a lot of, and then we'll get into the really nitty-gritty things that we really want to talk about. First of all, the Ironborn. Yara and Theon have escaped from the Iron Islands, and they're now headed over to meet Dany. And we get the most awkward scene of Theon in a brothel ever. It was really painful to watch. And do you think Theon is going to be... is in, or do you think Theon's out?
I think he's in, because he's only really got his sister in the world at the moment in terms of like somebody that actually cares for him. I mean, she did try her best to try and get him back, so he knows that she's like there for him. So I think he really wants to like sort of be there for her, but there's a part of him that is broken. I'm not sure if that episode was titled The Broken Man because of him, but maybe it was, because you could clearly see that he wasn't his old self, and yeah, it's going to take him a while.
What do you guys think of the plan to go meet up with Dany? I mean, they really don't know anything about her. They're just going off information that has been like relayed through Baelon. So for all intents and purposes, he could have been lying, and they're just headed to nothing.
You're on. Sorry. Armani, you gotta get your Greyjoys.
God, right. They rhyme. It's so hard sometimes.
That is, what do they call it? The Iron Death, you know?
You gotta pay the iron price.
You can pay the iron price. If you do that, you know? I don't know, but like, is it ever stated that they're gonna go meet Daenerys, or like that's their that's their plan, or is that just what we're
assuming? Yara leans in and was like, hey, we're gonna go meet this dragon lady and offer her our ships and our services or whatever. So that's what they're looking at doing right now.
Well, bearing in mind we saw another side of Yara, her more like a sexual side, which I was quite happy about, because she's always seemed a bit like just callous and like some sort of
uptight
woman. I mean it makes sense, because obviously like she's a seafarer and they're meant to be like sort of pirates, like the pirates of Westeros, so it kind of makes sense for them to do that, or for her to behave in that way. But maybe she's got plans of her own for Daenerys.
Let's see. My prediction is that they actually aren't going to make it to Meereen. But we'll see.
I mean, we're taking episode 7 and 8 together, right? We've seen that Meereen is being attacked from the sea, right? So, would be very good timing for 1,000 ships of well-seasoned pirates to come, right, and sort of flank the attackers from the other side. I don't know if they do it. I mean, that might be too clean for a Game of Thrones. I hope that it's not going to be so regarding their relationship with Daenerys, because I thought, and I'm going to jump here, but I think it's pertinent. There was a big, what I thought was a huge decision in the show, was Tyrion was wrong and Daenerys was correct, basically. And so in doing so, the show is basically saying that the idealist is the one to follow. The idealist is the one who actually, if they follow their integrity, they're going to come out on top, right?
Mm-hmm.
Tyrion does not, right? So you have now a lot of other people, though, who are hearing about Daenerys. And I think Yara and Theon, one of these characters, one of these groups, where they're looking at Daenerys as a possible ally to probably take back the Iron Islands, right? Like, I don't think they're going there to just devote themselves to her, right? Tyrion works with her because he believes that she would be a great queen, but also because he'll be in charge, right, of the Lannisters. He'll probably have the West.
That's really that's the only way he can actually return to Westeros, is if someone who's in charge is on his side. Yeah.
So, I mean, in the same way, so will they, right? Because Euron, after his one thrilling speech, won over all the lords of the Iron Islands, right? So,
by the way, I've just got to say, like, that was like so crazy. I mean, he came out as, oh yeah, I've killed your like king, basically, and all right, now follow me, because I'm gonna I'm gonna go and basically like help you guys like get this girl with her dragon queen, and they all bought it hook, like line and sinker.
Curtis, but as a you know, as the Brighton that you are, you know Shakespeare's golden rule from Julius Caesar is always be the last one to give a speech, right? So
yeah, that's basically. Well, speaking of being the last one to give speeches, let's move into the north, where Davos is speaking on behalf of Jon and Sansa, basically trying to help them rally support as they basically get ready to fight Ramsay. So basically, they managed to get the support of a few other houses, including House Mormont, who was kind of a Lady Mormont. Was kind of the fan favorite of two weeks ago.
Woo!
last we saw, Sansa wrote a mysterious letter. Do you guys have any predictions on who she wrote it to?
Well, I think whoever she wrote it to, is gonna have to have some sort of army or like some sort of advantage for her. So it could be another house we haven't seen yet. Like, I was playing this Game of Thrones game, which kind of led into different houses and how they actually work. In England, if you had a trade, you would have that as your surname. So, for example, if you were a Thatcher, you'd, build roofs for houses and things of that nature. So, she's probably got, there are probably other houses that they might be able to ally themselves with that aren't necessarily like a big house, but like have a trade or have something that they can levy with. But at the moment, they don't have anything to levy apart from their name. So whether or not they're going to get any like allegiance, I guess we'll see. But, I loved seeing how the interaction was between Lady Mormont and them, because you kept on throughout all the seasons hearing that the North remembers, and she was just reeling off all of these things, and even the other houses too. They were just reeling off these things that the Stark family has done in the past, and they're not going to forget.
Things that kind of how the Starks shot themselves in the foot, basically.
Your brother married a foreigner instead of doing his duty, and that's what got us into this mess. Other stuff my mum went to war with your brother and she died for that. They don't forget, and it's really good reminder of the fact that even though you're seeing this noble house that you want to root for, they aren't without failings. They have sort of transgressed along a lot of their community, so they've got to win back their trust in a sense. So it'd be interesting to see how that happens.
I like to that point also the fact that the world doesn't revolve around the Starks. There's other houses with their own issues to consider, and we do get we see a lot of other houses in this show, but we forget there's a lot of other side houses kind of doing their own thing out there, worried about their own communities. So it's pretty great to see the Starks really don't have as much clout as they used to, and kind of have to be on the same level with a lot of lesser houses, which I think they're definitely not used to dealing with. My prediction is that she wrote to Littlefinger. We see that obviously Brienne went to River Run to go talk to the Blackfish. So we
know how that ended, right?
God, that was painful.
It was horrible. I thought maybe there was some sort of, they're gonna spin it like Jamie goes north, and I don't know. I mean, maybe there's still a chance of that, but clearly now the need for some extra army is even greater, right? So, and also if it is Littlefinger, kind of makes it a little bit more exciting, I think, for viewers, because he's gonna have more leverage now, right? Assuming mm-hmm. they do, the next episode is called The Battle of the Bastards, so we're gonna get our big Winterfell fight, finally.
So we're mm-hmm. having Bastard Bowl.
We're having Bastard Bowl, that's right. Yeah. When, then they have Littlefinger now, assuming that he joins the fray. And he's, whether he outright betrays the Starks again, which I don't think is going to happen, but he's certainly not going to walk away empty-handed, right? Because that's what he's good at. He's good at manipulating situations to his advantage.
Yeah.
And I think it gives us a lot of kind of additional cool drama.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Well, speaking of manipulating situations, how do you guys think about Brienne's role in River Run? Because essentially she kind of convinces Jaime to try and do this as, like, you know, bloodless as possible. But she kind of also gives away a lot of information to Jaime that she really didn't need to talk about. Divulging, like, kind of the Starks' plan to retake the North, like, what's going on up there, what's happening with Sansa. Brienne has a habit of really showing her hand way too early.
I think she's kind of, it's a matter of the heart. She obviously has a lot of feelings for him. He's a man that was sort of like revered in the whole of Westeros as like this great fighter and like sword wielder, and he prided himself on that as well. And like everyone kind of says that he's a good looking person like in Westeros. So you know, she kind of fell for that, and then she also saw like him at his lowest point as well. So she feels like she knows him that much like more deeply than other people. Or she's seen a different side to him, like an honourable side. But regardless, he is a Lannister, and regardless, he's going to do what he needs to do. Like, so, yeah, she's way too trusting with him. Like, and I hope that doesn't, I don't know, come back to haunt her. But yeah, we'll see. But yeah, my opinion is that she's just a bit too trusting. She's a bit too noble and honourable.
That's been a big theme these past few episodes, especially with the fact that Jaime has no honor and Brienne kind of has the most possible honor. Also, we saw with one of Edward Tully's men who wanted to open the gate for him, even though it was clear that he probably was not going to, you know, Edward was not going to help them out. He was just going to screw them all over.
Okay, that made me so mad.
Well, that idea that honor is so binding that, like, even if you know this is the wrong decision, you have to do it. Which I also thought back to the point of when they make a promise, like when a knight makes a promise to a lord also promises they won't force the knight to do anything dishonorably. So in a way, like, I felt like Edmure was super selfish for that. I don't know.
No, it's funny, but... I have a totally different reading. By the end of it, I really felt like the Blackfish needed to be taken out of the equation because that sort of stubbornness has no place here. And I actually thought Edmure, yeah, he's Edmure, you know, whether or not we believe Jaime, he does. And he realizes that he can at least save his people in doing this and be, you know, be a coward, but he can save some lives.
Well, I read that differently because what I thought was the main motivation of him doing what he had to do, they had that conversation where they were talking about their families and talking about doing what you can to protect your family. And then he mentioned his wife and his aunt and his baby. And then he was like, I don't believe you. But he was like, well, whether you believe me or not, I'm going to slingshot him up on your castle. And then as soon as he heard that, like, that's when he sort of like turned and was like, don't do it. Okay, yeah, I'll just like, you know, surrender my castle.
It was mostly selfish. He's like, look, I'm tired of being a prisoner. You just promised me that I could get out of here, see my wife, see my kid. I haven't seen in a long time. You know, I just like want to get out of this. And at this point, he's like, either I get out of this now or I'm just going to die. And a lot of people are gonna die.
Edmure is less interesting to me, right, as a character, and like what his motivations are, because he's like ancillary, right? Whether or not he does it to save just his family, save himself, save his people, the bigger thing that happens is that Jaime ends this thing bloodlessly, and he does it while pretending to be the guy he used to be. I've been reading a lot of stuff about like, oh, Jaime turns bad again. And I actually don't, I don't know. I don't think that's the way it goes. And honestly, for me, the scene that did it was that last one with Brienne when she's sailing away and he waves at her. And I think he did what had to be done.
That was a bit of a sweet moment. I did like
that
moment.
Yeah, he realized no one's, like, he tried talking to the Blackfish from a position of, I'm going to be honorable, right? Mm-hmm. And he got dissed for it. So he goes back to Edmure and he doesn't play that this time, right? Instead, he goes into Kingslayer mode and he goes into scaring this guy into basically doing what's right. because the Blackfish was not going to do it, and he was going to waste our time and precious screen time of you know what I mean, of like a pointless battle that has nothing to do with the main storyline besides like, you know, handcuffing a couple of our favorite characters, you know.
Well, so, moving into a quick question on this, okay, Jamie and Brienne, do you think they're gonna fight or bang or both?
I think it's a respect of the I think it's a respect of ability, and I think, you know, she, the fact that she is someone who believes in honor, and for her to respect Jamie, I think is the most telling thing for us, and that's that he's a good guy, and we should always remember he's a good guy, no matter like what he starts saying to people now.
I don't know. I think, well, it would be nice to sort of kind of have an affirmation of their love, but I think he's made it clear that he loves only one person, and it's his sister. So even though he's got respect for her and admiration, maybe it's because she's like, she bested him, like, even though he was like half the man he once was, like, she still bested him. So like, I think in that sense it's like a respect, but it's not that love that he will, like, you know, go to war over. So yeah, like,
she's the only person that knows his secret, which is that basically he did what he did
to save everyone.
The realm, to save everyone. Yeah. And I think there's that, you know, he feels a lot of comfort around her. But the kind of like the jokes that Bronn makes about, I mean, I think maybe she loves him, but I don't, you know, it's a one way, it's definitely a one way street.
I think what's going
to
happen.
She needs to get away with that guy from the north, man. That's what needs to happen.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I think my prediction for this is that Brienne is going to have to, I'm hoping this is how it works out. Brienne has to fight Jaime. She has to kill him. Kiss on the forehead, then Jamie dies. That's like exactly what, that would be the perfect like level of like, hey, you know, like, we're so good, even though you had to kill me to save Sansa, probably. So,
well, do you think, okay, because you asked the question, did she give too much information? And do you think that with, I'll phrase it this way. I will be surprised if with everything that's happening at King's Landing, the Lannisters bother to go north.
No,
and like,
actually,
still,
yeah.
And still give a shit about, you know what I mean?
Yeah, given
Sansa or whatever.
Given,
and
what
I think
we,
actually,
go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I think actually Jaime can, will probably have freedom to, go north in support of the Starks, if anything, down the line. I mean, there's like way too much to figure out. He's gonna go back now, and have to figure out whatever we find out. Right, is the decision of the High Septons in Cersei's trial.
And that was what, okay, let's just, two things. Oh my god, let's move into King's Landing. We got to see Sir Robert Strong rip someone's head off, which is always great. Always
that
a
was
pleasure.
Dope.
God, it's just, okay, question. So one of the sparrows actually lands a blow, like right into his chest.
Yeah, right.
Do you
right,
think that he's
right
impervious
in.
To injury, or it just didn't go deep enough?
I think whatever it's got to do, well, like, was that guy that, like, whoever did the experiments, he's made him, like, sort of stronger and, like, kind of undead. So I guess he's, like, some sort of half-zombie type of creature.
Greg, I actually thought that the Faith was going to nominate Loras Tyrell as their person to fight in Trial by Combat, which would have been a crazy good move. But this was maybe crazier, because I was like, God, ugh. Also crazier and masterful and kind of disappointing, because I think twice we've been like kind of teased with this big standoff between like the Crown and the Faith, kind of, or the Lannisters and the Faith, and we haven't gotten it, and we won't get it.
We're not going to get it, because remember, like, that conversation with the Queen of Thorns, and
I think what's kind of really masterful about just the way this is all being handled is that, like, Armani, we've for the last like couple weeks, you and TJ were like, we don't like, you know, we're against the High Sparrow, and I kept trying to make the case that, like, yeah, but he at the very least seems honest with his beliefs, you know, and there's like a lack of, at least the way I thought he was going to be, right, there's like a lack of manipulation in terms of his integrity, and what's so great about this move that they pulled is that it's actually a progressive good move, right? Like it's another step where we're like, we kind of want to see this happen, but then like, is that like our lower, you know, our base instinct, like eliminating this battle is good for society, right? And it's a decision that comes from the sparrow.
This is what's interesting. It's kind of like it's not necessarily a better thing. It's just something that probably exists in other parts of that world. Like, because remember, there's like more than one continent, so there's other places with different rules. So they've decided to go back to they're saying that this way that they're practicing right now is too barbaric, and they're going to try something else. It's much like the like getting rid of the death penalty, like saying, oh, like it's been outlawed in this state, so let's do that. Like,
yeah, I think that was certainly to Greg's point, but also wait, that Greg, back to that too, it would be progressive in their society to be like, hey, we want to have a fair trial, we don't want to let like real, you know, real bad people get off because of this technicality of a trial by combat. I mean, if you think about it, the best criminals are the best fighters, so of course they're gonna have the best chance of getting off with that, you know, that loophole. But I mean, clearly it was just to manipulate Cersei's trial, one, who technically I guess you could say is guilty, but at the same time, it's not going to be like a fair jury, so it's not like she has a fair chance of really defending herself at this point. So like, why? It's like,
well, I don't know though, right? I mean, because it's they make it it's their policy going forward, right? And if, I mean, it's basically a theocracy, right? So they believe that the guys who read the Bible the most are going to be the best at judging things, and we can disagree with that, right? As we would, and if they were ever implemented, you know, in either England or America or any other Western, you know, modern country. But I don't fault the sparrow for doing what he believes in, and I think that's something. It's kind of refreshing in a show where a lot of different characters are constantly looking for purpose and navigating that and trying and like and failing at it very often, right? And I think like you can look at, for example, the way the Septon and the whole Church of the Seven works and relate that very clearly to like what the Hound is going through, where he met someone who died for his beliefs. And now the Hound is forced into this weird circular thing of violence being his purpose. Like he's now going to be like an axe of justice, effectively.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we're still getting some violent justice that way. Before we move into what's going on with the Hound right now, do you guys have any predictions for Cersei's plan to get out of this, or do you think she's going to go to trial?
There's not really. This is the thing, like, they always mention Castle Rock, but we've not seen it yet. And in fact, in this series, I've seen probably like less new places than in any other. Like, we've not really been introduced to like any new places. So that's the only place that she would have some modicum of, not necessarily freedom, but
or protection from people taking it.
Like, exactly. So she could get spirited away to Castle Rock.
No one likes Cersei. Like, there's no reason to protect her. Like, who, like, if I was in their shoes, like, if I wasn't so against the faith, of course I'd want to see Cersei put to death. Like, I have no, like, she's a terrible person. Like, there's no reason to like her or to want to defend her. The only reason we're on her side at all is because we don't like the faith. Like, she could be anyone else, and I would still side with them.
Well, not all of us don't like the faith, but
yeah.
My prediction is Cersei's gonna burn it down like Left Eye. That's my prediction.
Oh, like Left Eye, she took it there. Oh man.
Right. There's that little line about that her maester tells her that the rumors are true, and there's been some murmurings that those rumors are in fact new secret. Caches of wildfire somewhere in King's Landing.
That's sort of really strange, because like that's what Jaime stopped the Mad King from doing. So if she was to do that, like the reason why he's the Kingslayer and the reason why like he's looked at as this like unhonorable person is for stopping somebody doing that. And the person that he loves goes and does that.
If he was someone that wanted to go around and prove his honor, he would tell everybody that he killed the king to save them from, you know what I mean? He only tells it to Brienne, which is why I sort of like, I think he gains his feelings of honor from Brienne, and it's why he lets her go, and it's why ultimately they're not going to fight or bang or anything like that, because it's a little bit...
I don't think that would have happened, because no one would have believed him. Remember how, like, in the first series, when he was having, like, interactions with Ed, yeah? Like, Ed, like, has so much disdain for him, and, like, he was just kind of being a bit kind of jovial and almost, like, a bit smarmy, but, like, he didn't hate the guy at all. Like, he was just, like, really indifferent. And he kind of got a lot of like animosity off other people, like, but you didn't see him give out any, like, even with the king, like Robert Baratheon was always saying, oh, Kingslayer, like, and stuff like that, and he was just like not giving out much, like, he just didn't, you know what I mean? Like,
well, yeah, no, I mean, and I guess it really comes down to whether you believe that Jaime has changed. I do. I think he's changed, and he is now using, in this case, he used basically the guise of his old self to get Edmure to do something that he knew he wouldn't do under any other pretense. Mm-hmm. And actually, I mean, like, to your point, you know, he loves Cersei, and would there be any sweeter ending than Jaime having to kill Cersei? Because ultimately, he is a good guy, and that trumps whatever this sort of sick love is that he has for her.
Well,
I don't know.
He is the little brother, so
that'd be that. Well, there we go, right? And we have that prophecy that's alluded in. Was it last?
I thought
season?
They were twins.
Yeah, but Cersei's older, technically older than Jaime, so he's the little
brother.
Oh,
well, like by a few minutes. Like, yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey man, you pop out second, you're younger.
All right. Well, really touching quickly on the Hound, has an awesome, awesome Punisher-esque storyline where he basically tries to lead a good life, then, you know, once his whole community is slaughtered, as you mentioned earlier, he goes on basically a rampage to avenge them, and he does get some sweet justice from the people he thought he was against. Basically, the marauders who attacked his little village / commune were claiming to be a part of the Brotherhood Without Banners. The Brotherhood is like, nah, they just were just terrible people, so we're going to execute him. Do you guys think the Hound is now going to hang out with them, or?
I definitely, I guess I think that the Hound is sort of taking this a similar turn that Jaime has, where we should believe that he is a good guy, that he will fight for justice effectively. Whether that is with the Brotherhood, still unclear, although it did sort of seem, I mean, the fact that they echoed the Septon's belief that he was saved for a reason seems to me, also that they're going north, you know, it seems to me like maybe he joins them, but they're never really buds, you know, they sort mm-hmm. of travel together, that kind of thing. That's sort of like the relationship. I'm seeing like maybe a possible like new buddy travel group, you know, between like Thoros of Myr and the Hound.
Yeah, we just lost Varys and Tyrion, so it would be nice to get a new team up to root for. All right, Greg, thanks for hanging out with us. We'll see.
Yeah,
you
sorry
next
guys,
week.
I got it. Yeah.
Yeah, no worries. And okay. Curtis, you and I can wrap this one up. Let's
okay.
jump into Braavos with Arya.
Yeah,
apparently
okay.
the waif is the Terminator. Did not, just like, Jesus Christ. How'd you feel about that ending? Because it kind of led up to a fight scene where we assumed that maybe Arya would try and face off with her. But I thought we would at least get to see it.
I don't mind that too much. I mean, like, there's always room for it in another episode, I hope.
I don't think they're actually going to... I mean, I think they're going to leave it to the fact of, like, yeah, Arya trained blindfold, so just imagine that she, like, is super good at fighting in the dark. But I'm like, you would assume the waif also at one point had to fight blinded? Like, she just... Like, I don't understand why that would really give Arya the advantage. Like, Arya's, like, basically dying. You know, she is dying. She's almost dead. She just jumped off a bridge. I don't see her, even if, for some reason, she had an advantage in darkness, being able to actually fight the waif. That seems just highly unlikely.
Well, I mean, she did have her sword, and She was also trained by that guy, so it's almost like she was fighting with other like instruments before, like they weren't her, like, you know, her weapon of choice, but like I think she's pretty adept at using like needles, so like that hopefully would have worked in her favor. It was almost like that Batman thing where it's like, oh, like, you know, you merely adopted it, I was born in it type of thing.
Now that she's free to go back to Westeros, which I was actually, Jacques and Hagar was pretty chill about her just leaving. I mean, like, this whole like little like training school seems very like willy nilly, and maybe it should have more structure, because like now students are killing each other, one's just walking away. He wasted a lot. Now he has no one that he's trained this entire time. So is he looking for new interns? I don't know.
Interns.
I'm just like, what is going on? Like, either they can't effectively train people, or he never expected to be able to actually train Arya in the first place, which is like, why do all this? But now that she's going back to Westeros, do you think she's going to meet up with Jon and Sansa, or maybe meet up with the Hound?
Well, that might be the plan, but I mean, for so many seasons, we kind of got used to them not being able to see each other. Like,
pushing into, real quick while we're in the east, Dany's home, Meereen, and just in time. Prediction?
That was an anticlimax. Like, there was nothing cool about that entrance. She just walked in, you saw Dragon fly away, and that was it.
She walked in the way, like, your mom walks in, like, when she gets off work and she expects you to be doing some shit wrong. Like, just, like, really quick, everyone's like, oh, shit, she's back. Oh, snap.
Yeah. I felt like that could have waited a bit longer. Like, to be honest, that could have waited till like next episode, because her coming back, like, you just saw her for like a split second. She didn't even say anything, did she?
No, she didn't go, "I'm back." Like, Dany's home. No, yeah. She just walked in. I assume her that Drogon is just gonna go burn all those ships, and that'll be the end of this entire fight. Like, that'd just be the, you know.
Done. Well, that should be, but yeah, that should be. Like, no, there's no two ways about it. But yeah, I don't know. I guess she's come back, and she's come back with all of her like horse lords.
But so we don't know if like what she rode in. So we don't know if like they're like still, you know, down the road, or if like,
well, she, if she's come with them, then what I think they're gonna do is some sort of like, I don't know, kind of like Battle of Normandy type of like on the beaches. Yeah, some sort of like militia on a beachfront. Like, that would be pretty cool. I think we haven't really seen much like warfare in this series. There's been like skirmishes, but there's not been like an actual, and like when I saw the siege starting.
I mean, honestly, at this point, I'm not really interested. I know this is gonna sound weird, but I'm not really that invested in seeing this battle between her and the Masters. Like, we don't have anything invested in them. Like, we just honestly, I think, want to move on from this whole thing completely. You know?
Well, what, you mean the slavery thing? I think it was like...
Yeah, I just think we're just like, it's been really beaten over the head with these past few seasons. We don't want slavery to happen. Dany's, we just want her to just kill the Masters. We just move on.
Get rid of it, but you can't actually get rid of it. And I think that's what they're trying to say within the framework of that world, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So to just have them get hardcore killed, that wouldn't be realistic, because like the point is like these people are in power for a reason, and you can have a queen with her dragons and her honor and her what's that word that everyone keeps using about her? Her idealism. Mm-hmm. And it won't count for shit.
Yeah, well, that's true. I mean, I guess maybe, I mean, I think next week we're just going to be focusing more like on the North, like with that whole Battle of the Bastards thing, but maybe we'll get some Meereen. I mean, we also still need to catch up with Bran and see what's going on there. So we have like a lot of loose ends that we want to check in on. But I think the most pressing will certainly be the battle for Winterfell and the Battle of Meereen.
Yeah. Winterfell is the one that interests me. Not just because of like, it's mainly because of the White Walkers as well, because we haven't seen that much of the White Walkers apart from with Bran, and like after, you know, Hold the Door, like we haven't seen any of them, and it's scaring me a lot more now, because I'm like, oh my god, did they make it out all right? Like,
moving into our my favorite segment. Who do you think's having the best week and the worst week?
I guess the Starks aren't having the best week because they've just been getting nosed left, right, and center. It's like, you know, when you see those films when like somebody's like at the door trying to like get somebody to buy something,
just
and then
slam,
the door just
gets
get slammed in their face like every time. I felt like I've just seen that, but with the Starks. So yeah, them not having the best week. Who's having the best week? Brienne, because she got to see like this, you know, this guy that she really admires, and he waved her off while she was on a boat. That was pretty romantic. She's probably gonna remember that moment forever.
Okay.
I know. I'm still thinking about it. So I'm still talking about it. So yeah, like she's got one for the memory bank right there. So
yeah. I think my best week, Edmure Tully. Last week he was in a dungeon. This week back in his own home. Like, he's definitely made a come up. I mean, no matter how he got there, he is certainly in a better place. I'd say Cersei is having the worst fucking week, because it's like an are you kidding me moment. Like, the one thing that she was banking on this whole time to get out of this is now taken away. So really she has no friends, no way to get out of this trial. She's basically like guaranteed death unless she can get out of King's Landing. So
yeah, and her son just like betrayed her as well.
Wow.
Like,
yeah,
like her son just betrayed. I was like, oh man, like you might be like not like a warfaring kind of guy, you might be like timid, but you still love your mum, don't you? Like, even if people are telling you that, like, you know, she's done some bad stuff, like, dude, that's your mum. I thought what was going to happen with the show is that he was just going to be her puppet. And he, like, there was just going to be a power struggle between these two women over, like, what they were going to get.
Over Tommen, yeah.
Yeah, I thought Tommen was going to be like, I've got to do what mummy says. Oh, I've got to do what my wife says, but I've got to do what mummy says. And like him having this like, brain freeze. And then like going back. And I thought that's what was going to happen. I didn't see this whole like, you know, Faith Militant thing coming in, intervening, and then like, you know, putting a hand up his ass and like making him their puppet. But that's obviously what's happened. So yeah. But yeah, she's having a shit week.
Yeah, all right. And real quick, Battle of the Bastards, who do you think's gonna win? Obviously Jon.
Well, I don't think he's gonna die again. But I can see Ramsay losing the castle somehow. There's gonna be no sort of like magical thing to go and save them, like, apart from a giant, I guess. Like they might have like a savior, but it won't be like in a magical type of thing, really. Mm-hmm. unless Bran does some like, I'm gonna control all the animals type of thing. Well, how cool would that be, like, if Bran just did a Dr. Doolittle, and then all of these like like wild animals just came storming in?
That actually would be pretty crazy, but I don't,
that would
I
be
think
pretty
Bran's,
crazy.
I think Bran's too preoccupied right now to interfere with what's going on over there.
Or maybe he could warg into like Ghost and do some like,
maybe he'll just warg into Ramsay and make him kill himself.
He could have done that ages ago in that case. Oh, I don't know. Like, all of these different gods, like, as I was saying before with the whole mirroring reality and the world we live in, like, we all have these different gods, but in reality, like, we just have a different perception of, or perceive a different way of what, like, God really is, but we still don't know. But we align ourselves to these forces anyway. Now, what I think they're trying to do in this world is having all of these different gods. And I think that guy kind of alluded to it, saying, oh, I don't fucking know like who the which god's right or which god's wrong. There's a god over here that does this. There's the seven gods over there, and we believe in this. Who knows what's right? But like, there's a lot of talk about this Rylor potentially being Bran. Like this, I don't know, god that, you know, he talks in the fire type of thing, because it's a whole element, and like maybe Bran's walking into different elements in different times throughout history. Who knows? But if that's true, and that he's got this sort of omniscience, then couldn't he also be like the faceless god as well? Like,
ooh,
the one that his sister was almost potentially going to follow. And like, yeah, there might be more of like a thread between all of these religions than like we're actually seeing just yet. So that might be explored, like maybe towards either the end of this season or the beginning of the next one.
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely love to see like more, maybe like some huge like tie in between all those religions. It'd be super cool if it was like maybe like whoever becomes Three-Eyed Raven is that tie in. But I guess,
yeah, because if you wanted to think about the Three-Eyed Raven having like a third eye is like sort of awakening, like, and the third eye's got a lot of reverence in our world. We talk about it all the time and about being like spiritually awakened, and the fact that he's a Three-Eyed Raven, maybe that's like some divine power that he's got, like, that we've not seen yet.
Because
he's pretty powerful, like even talking to people back in time is pretty astounding, like much less anything else he can do, which is like going into animals, which is, and controlling people as well. He's basically like Charles Xavier and Dr. Doolittle rolled in one. and Marty McFly.
Yeah, okay, well, right on. Well, thank you so much for jumping into this with me this week. I really appreciate it. Hopefully we can get you back on. Maybe for the finale, when we have TJ back, we'll have like just a quad.
A four-way.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I shouldn't say that. But you know what I mean.
Yeah, right on. Well, thank you, and I'll see you next week.
Ooh.